I really love your accent.
It's a mixture of Yorkshire, South London, Dublin, Los Angeles, New York, and Montreal. Hello, everybody. It's Mark Ryan here, Mr. Gates from Starz production of Black Sails. I'm on Variety Radio Online, and I want you to watch Black Sails on Saturday night on Starz. Come aboard the ship and sail the sea with the pirates of Black Sails.
Welcome to Variety Radio Online, bringing you all things entertainment, including news, reviews, and, of course, interviews. Today we have the awesome Mark Ryan. You guys know him as the voice of Bumblebee in Michael Bay's Transformers, which he actually appeared in all three movies as different characters. He's also been in Community, Alias, Jag, so many great projects. You will see him next in Starz' latest original series, Black Sails. Everybody, please welcome Mark Ryan.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Now, there's an introduction. How am I ever going to live up to that?
I mean, the show is awesome, so I think that'll be better than my introduction by far.
How many, have you seen the opening episode? Have you seen more than the opening episode?
I've only seen the first episode that they put online, which you can find on the Starz website, streaming free until, I'm assuming, the premiere date this Saturday, right?
Yes. It airs, I think it's 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here and maybe 6 p.m. In New York, but it's available online from Starz and from various other sites, including it's on YouTube as well, I believe. So, but yes, it's quite an amazing opening to the show, huh?
Yes, for the fans that are out there that don't know what it's about, it's set during the golden age of piracy. The feared Captain Flint brings on a younger crew member as they fight for the survival of the New Providence Islands, which is a really cool concept. So
yes, which is historically how things were in New Providence at that period.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I said it's historically how things were during the period in New Providence. It wasn't ruled by anybody. It had been actually abandoned, I think, by the British Empire at that point. So the pirates took it over and had their own form of communal government and trading.
And with all of this historical information going into the project, were you aware of the history of the pirates, or did you have to go through an intensive study session?
No, I because of the nature of some of the stuff that I'd done in my previous career, I'd read up quite a bit about the history of pirates and the iconography of the skull and crossbones and the history of some of the pirates and how they migrated from being what was called privateers in the period to being pirates. And a lot of the privateers that were originally given their charters by the Tudor kings and queens of Britain, and they hired these guys that were basically merchantmen and seafaring warriors, if you like, to go around and attack other merchantmen and ships from other then nations that we were at war with, i.e. the Spanish, the French, the Dutch. And so those were called privateers, and they had letters of marque that were designed for that purpose, so they could basically be mercenaries at sea. Once the British Empire made peace with various royal houses and various nations in Europe, then they were suddenly outlawed and became pirates because they were no longer given permission to do that. But of course, it was such a lucrative endeavor, privateering and pirating, that these guys wouldn't want to give that up. And, of course, they were around the other side of the world, so they went, well, if they want to come and stop us, they have to sail around here and do so. And that led to the battles between the British Navy and the pirate ships.
Ah, I see. And knowing all of this history, is there something you, just coming across in your research and all of the other projects you've done, a story or a tale that stood out to you?
I think it was more about the spirit of rebellion historically that stood out for me and how that somehow is reflected in society today. I think it was more about the fact that these guys were on the other side of the world New lands were being discovered. New social orders were being discovered. Literally, new plants, new animals, everything. The whole world was opening up. And so they were questioning and flexing their muscles against the control and traditional means, if you like, of communication and controlling people. And this afforded them the chance to go, well, we can do this a different way. So it was more about the time, the what was going on politically that resonates in me, I think, and what resonates in an audience for the show.
It's interesting that you bring up the relevance of the politics of that time. Do you think there's something from that era that we could bring into the new, into 2014, something that we can learn from those pirates?
Absolutely. I think that the questioning of the old spiritual, religious, social orders that were traditionally in place, where people were saying this is the way it has to be and people had to go along with that blindly, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking questions. I don't think there's anything, you know, going, why not? How did this happen? Why does this have to be so? I think that is something that right now, even in world communications, and even the very way this show has been put forward on cable channel is questioning the traditional ways that shows have been developed in the past. I think we're into an evolutionary cycle. This is a different epoch of television making. So it's not just the golden age of pirates that we're talking about. We're actually talking about the future of the golden age of television drama, which has been actually bubbling under for 30 years, and Black Sails is without doubt right at the spearhead of showing how a large-scale, high-quality production value television show can reach a huge international audience. And even beyond stars as home demographic, but also around the world.
Yeah, this production is ginormous. I mean, I remember the first time I saw this, the trailer for this wasn't even on TV. It was in the movie theater during the previews for Wolf of Wall Street. So it's massive.
Well, it's and,
yeah.
Michael doesn't do anything small, and his trademark, if you like, is there we have these amazing production values which speak to a world audience, not just to an American audience, but to an international audience. And you're going along for the ride. The great thing about these new types of shows, and I've said this before, is you're watching an eight-hour film. And the it's a movie scale quality of picture that you're looking at with the sets, with the acting, with the CGI. And it takes you on a ride, not just for a couple of hours that you may sit in a theater and watch a film, but for 8 episodes, 8 hours, 10 hours, not for just 8, 10, 12 weeks, but for 2 or 3 years. And the audience nowadays is very smart. They're very intelligent. They don't just want to see the battles, although they love that as well, and I love that as well. They want to know who these people are. They want to know how they interacted. They want to understand the politics of the time, and they want to be taken through these complex, sometimes violent, sometimes tender, sometimes conflicting drives of what the characters are living out in the show.
Yeah, this there's just so much going on. It really does feel like a mini movie. And with 8 episodes, all of this stuff just in one small hour, how is it like filming all of that?
Oh, it's stupendous. I think all of us, after we did the first read through, because that was the first time we'd actually met each other, was the first read through in Cape Town. Toby's team, this is Zach, Jessica, we were at Hannah New, you know, everybody, Toby Schmitz, you know, Luke, I think we all sat there and looked at each other and went, when we heard all of the characters' voices within one room and how they interacted with each other, you know, Hakeem, everybody, once we heard how those voices interacted and where they were all placed, we stood outside for a while, all kind of looking at each other going, wow, this is going to be cool. This is going to be a great ride. And so right from the very beginning, And then once we walked onto the set and started seeing the size of the production itself in terms of the boats are just amazing pieces of craftsmanship. Wolf, who was the set designer, did an amazing job. That we built two full-size 17th century galleons. The town of Nassau, which you would literally walk into, look around 360 degrees, and there's ports and storerooms and taverns and brothels and pirate camps. You were in that environment, and it was an amazing thing to be a part of.
All of the boats were full to form. Were they functional as well? Like, how much of it was special effects and CGI, and how much of it was physically just that big boat?
Well, both of the boats that you see there, we have what's called a boat and a half, which is basically one full size, fully rigged, fully gun decked, fully built galley, and the other is a half ship, what we call a half ship, so you can film inside the ship and move around the ship during the battle sequences. It's full size again, full sails, full gun decks and rigging and everything. And I actually talked to not just the engineers that built it, but because they're both on gimbals, what we call a gimbal in the water, so they can rock the ship and shake it as it's moving through the water. If they sealed the boat, the bottom of the boat, and put a proper keel in it, I was told by the guys that built it that the ship was seaworthy. They could make that ship seaworthy, and it would actually be able to sail on the water as a 17th century galleon. It was built in such a way that they could literally lift it off the gimbal, complete the keel and the underside of the boat, and sail it on the ocean.
Oh, my gosh. And just being on that boat and having it rock, as you said, did anyone get motion sickness or seasickness from that?
Well, on the gun deck sets, which are on sound stages, also at Cape Town Film Studios, we tended to close those off. And one of the things that makes you get seasick is the fact that you lose a vision in your brain of where the horizon is. And so when we shot in some of the gun decks, some of the makeup and wardrobe people actually had to leave the decks because there's no point with which you can focus on as a horizon to keep your equilibrium stable. So some people really did have to go outside and leave the set because they were feeling nauseous. But what it did for me, which was a revelation, was having served on big naval warships myself, both on aircraft carriers and LPDs, landing platform docks. I've been on board a real warship in a big sea, in the North Sea, the Atlantic. I've been on an LPD, landing platform dock, which is a big boat in the Atlantic Ocean. And let me tell you, an 8 or 9 storm lifts up big warships and throws them around like they're toys. And so my respect for the people that sailed around the world, sailed these small wooden ships across the Atlantic and sometimes across the Pacific, went up through the roof. I went, these people were tough SOBs to do what they did, because if they were literally thrown around in the ocean with the state of the navigational aids that they had, which were rudimentary, the hygiene, which was rudimentary, but the very fact that they were living in such close quarters, in such a harsh environment, my respect for not just the pirates, but people like James Cook and the explorers, the seafaring explorers, went up. I went, wow, that was quite an achievement. These guys were tough people.
Wow, and we have to go back to this warship that you worked on. When was this, and how did you get into that?
I served in the British military some years ago, and I was involved with operations that were sometimes seaborne, sometimes airborne, and I worked in all kinds of interesting areas. In fact, I'm co-writing my biography with John Matthews at the moment, which is called Hold Fast. And we have an excerpt out of that at the moment, which you can either pick up from Mythwood Books, which is the publisher of this work, And we talk about some of my work with in the intelligence world and with the special forces and all that kind of stuff. So that's out there at the moment, the excerpt. You can either pick it up from my Facebook page or from the Wildwood Tarot page or from Mythwood Books. It's floating about. There's an excerpt there which refers to some of that work and how Ray Winston, my old pal Ray Winston, informed us of an event that happened in London. But I invited you to go and track it down. It's called Hold Fast, The Adventures of a Hollywood Pirate. Mythwood Books is publishing it. John Matthews is the co-author. And there's an excerpt out there right now about some of my time spent in the ministry.
Now I definitely have to go track that down. Thank you so much for the recommendation.
You're more than welcome.
Now, I want to talk about your character, Gates.
Yes.
First of all, tell everyone about your character.
Mr. Gates, in many ways, is the audience's eyes and ears, an introduction into this pirate world, because he interacts with so many of the major players on Providence Island and obviously on the boat. Historically, the quartermaster of a pirate ship like this was elected by the crew to be their representative with the captain of the boat. The old system, the power system that was inherited by the pirates was the British naval, or sometimes the Spanish or French naval tradition, where the captain was in charge of the boat and he delegated through his junior officers and the quartermaster and the bosun what he wanted to happen on the ship. Well, because these guys now are working for themselves, it was a very democratic system. And the crew voted in the bosun, the quartermaster, and the captain. And the rules basically went that the quartermaster and the bosun ran the ship when they weren't in battle. And when they were in battle, then that was the captain's sole control over the boat. And they'd literally signed on to, a charter whereby that was the only time the captain would give his orders and they were supposed to be followed. The quartermaster and the bosun ran the boat, and they're the nexus of power and influence between the crew, which were all blue-collar guys, and usually the captains that were slightly better educated and obviously knew about navigation, knew how to run a boat, and were usually good tacticians at sea. And so Gates' relationship with Flint is not only is he his friend, but he's also his voice to the crew, and so he interacts with all levels, not just on the boat, but at New Providence Island. So he interacts with Helena Guthrie, and he has a relationship with her in terms of understanding that she is the arbiter of trading power there. He also interacts with Toby Schmidt as Rackham, who was the quartermaster on Charles Vane's boat, the Ranger. He interacts with everybody and all races, social groups, and belief systems who are serving on the boat as pirates. So for me, as a character, it's a fantastic character. I get to play in so many different, see and use different aspects and facets of this character's personality. And for me, it's a great gift as an actor to be able to play all of these different types of human interaction. So I get to be funny, I get to be violent, I get to be a bully, I get to be manipulative, I get to be despairing, I get to be confused, I get to share humor. it's what can I say? It's an absolute gift of a part for an actor, and without doubt, I've had so much fun with Mr. Gates, particularly with Toby, and yet with the whole cast, and some of the scenes that we've done. Absolute gift of the part.
And I'm curious, continuing on with Mr. Gates, about the beard. Whose idea was to grow that epic handlebar beard that goes into the mustache?
The whole bearded thing in my career has been an on-again, off-again affair, which started when I played a bad guy. Well, actually started with Che Guevara. I'm lucky enough to be one of the few guys in the world that ever played Magaldi and then Che Guevara in the musical Evita in the West End, directed by Harold Prince. And Magaldi was clean-shaven, sort of with a very well-manicured moustache. And then I ended up swapping parts and playing Che Guevara. And so I grew a beard for that part. And a lot of people said at the time, beards weren't a big fashionable thing. But people said, you know, that really suits you. And the director, Ian Sharp, who was doing a film called Who Dares Wins about the Iranian embassy siege in London, he'd come to see the show, and he said, there's a part in a show I'm looking at called, I did Who Dares Wins. He said, no, keep the beard. And so I kept the beard for Who Dares Wins and sort of kept this very sort of long, curly hair, you know, bearded look. And then he was saying to me, he said, I've got, there's a part in the show I'm doing called Robin the Shield, keep the beard. And that part originally was called Edmund the Archer. And then on the first day of shooting, was renamed Nazir the Saracen. And that's how Nazir the Saracen was born. I spent 3 years playing this very quiet, subdued, enigmatic character called Nazir, where I kept the beard for 3 years. And so over my career, the beard has come and gone depending on which character I'm playing. But because I actually, you know, when I'm between jobs, I actually just let it grow. When I went in for this one, everybody went, keep the beard. No, the beard works. And so when we got down there to Cape Town, they were gluing bits of things onto me and trying all different styles, and I just let them have at it. And so that, the mutton chops and the little triangle under the chin, that, it grew out of the makeup girls just having fun with my look. And they did a fantastic job. They made up my eyes as well. You can see I've got these. That is actually makeup, a special makeup that's applied to my eyes to add wrinkles to my eyes.
Eyes?
Well, makeup is underneath my eyes and in the corners, and that ages my eyes. That is actually makeup. And they would literally spend an hour every morning spraying me, patting me, blow-drying my, literally with a blow-dryer, painting this makeup onto the corner of my eyes and on my cheeks, then blow drying it to bring the wrinkles that you see on the screen. Those wrinkles out there, folks, I'm just telling you. That's
all. Well, with the makeup and the beard, have you ever considered working with Peter Jackson on The Hobbit? Because they have dwarves.
I'm waiting for his call. Peter Jackson, if you're listening, you can call me anytime. And I will be, a hobbit or a dwarf or whatever it is you want me to be. I'd love to go back to New Zealand. I've visited there in the past, and I'd be happy to go back and spend some time. So, Peter Jackson, if you're listening, just call me. We can work it out, baby.
Now, this September, September 19th to be exact, it's going to be International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Now that you're on Black Sails, does this day have a more significant meaning to you?
It's always had a meaning to me because for some bizarre reason, a lot of the fellow fans of Transformers and Robin of Sherwood and Community and other shows I've been involved with, this and of course in the Renaissance Fair, festival-type world, this is something that goes on. What you won't hear in Black Sails is arg. There aren't many args. There's quite a few of the noises, but not many args. And so, however...
Can you do that one more time?
What, the arg? That's the only time you're going to hear it from me. You don't hear it in the show. There's no args in the show. There's lots of other noises. Some of them I'm sure that you will recognize, but there's a few, if any, args. There's lots of chanting and pirates voicing their opinions, but that kind of stuff you don't hear. But Talk Like a Pirate Day is something that has certainly been in my universe, I think, since it started, which is now over 10 years now. We've had Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Because of the
Renaissance Festival type thing and the followers of Robin of Sherwood, because pirates are an archetypal world unto themselves, yes, no, I've been dragged into that on more than one occasion, yeah.
Now, what can fans who have seen the first episode, what can they expect from the rest of the season?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think I'm going to answer it in a couple of ways. First of all, as we talked about, the scale of this is quite extraordinary. It's probably one of the biggest shows, certainly I've ever worked on, and it's certainly ever going to be launched onto the oceans of cable television. But also it's a new paradigm in many ways for cable television. As we were talking earlier, the audience for this type of show, they're complex and they're demanding, and yet they're patient. And so they want to follow the threads of these characters' motivations and what's going on in their psyches like never before. They expect complexity. And so what they try to do here, what the writers have tried to do, is intertwine various levels of this show. So it works not just on, okay, it's Pirates of the Sea, you know, blowing each other apart, but we understand the motivations of the characters. And that takes a while to unravel and to present itself to an audience. The first episode, as you've seen, is huge and it's complex. And there are lots of different things going on within the show. What does that mean? Where do we go with that? Where does this, you know, pay off? And you have to stay with the show to follow that through. So the first two or three episodes are then setting up this is who these people are. This is the world they're in. These are the conflicts that are going on based in historical events. And so these are some of the historical characters that were moving through these events at this time. So there's a bit of setting up and there's a bit of showing the nature of the relationships between people, and then we go back into high seas adventure. But you have to do that in this type of show, otherwise, you know, it's okay seeing battles, but people are going to go, well, I don't understand who or why they're doing this. And we have an arc we have an arc that goes for 8 hours that you have to go on that journey to follow the story to where this is going. And it changes in every episode, which is fantastic. At the end of every episode, and I was there, and I've watched this and gone, where is this going? How are they going to get out of this? And you've got all these moving parts that become a coherent whole once you follow the arc of the story. And so hopefully we've got enough action and enough history and enough relationship and enough sensuality for people to go, wow, this is a very broad canvas.
I am so excited. This first episode was crazy, and I'm sure the rest of the season is going to be crazy just like that. For everyone out there, go check out Black Sails when it premieres this Saturday, January 25th at 9 p.m. on Starz, or you can catch the first episode online, YouTube, Starz Official Channel. Thank you so much, Mark, for talking with us today.
Well, thank you, Keisha. It was an absolute pleasure. Good luck with the rest of the show, and please keep watching.
All right, thank you. We totally will. And the VRL will be doing a review show each week with our resident pirate R and our resident Renaissance woman, Jess. Don't forget, we also have a private screening of Thunder Road with the actors Charlie Rooley, Matt Dallas, and Stephen Graham. Hot guys, go over to our website, check it out, get all the info on that, and there's only 12 tickets left, so definitely go get your tickets now. And as always, you can find us online at www.thevro.com, facebook.com/varietyradioonline, and on Twitter @thevro. Thank you guys for listening, and again, thank you, Mark.
You're more than welcome, guys. Thank you so much. Bless your listeners, and we'll see you somewhere on the high seas.
When you don't go to GEICO.com, car insurance can seem intense. Like breakup R&B intense.
I thought you said you loved the sweater that I got you. If you didn't, you could have told me.
GEICO makes it easy. Just go to GEICO.com anytime to update or check your policy without all the extra drama.
I even had a gift receipt.